The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
VR, virtual reality, it's often been lauded as the future for film and gaming. But in the last couple of years, charities and NGOs have also been using it to try and show us the reality of life in places like Gaza or after the earthquake in Nepal, for example. And the idea being that when you view these films in virtual reality, you feel a much greater sense of empathy with the subject and a better understanding of what they're going through. Well, Eric Ramirez is a philosophy professor at Santa Clara University in California, and he's a little sceptical about all of this. Eric, you're welcome to the programme.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I've seen these type of films a number of times on using virtual reality, and it is incredible how you are transported to a particular place. I mentioned the example of Gaza, for example. Right. And you do get a real sort of a huge sense of sympathy for the person and what they're going through. You have said, though, that there's a difference here between sympathy and empathy, and we need to be really careful about differentiating between both. Tell me more.
Right. And I think you used the term correctly just now when you described your experience with the Gaza simulation. And anytime anybody talks about psychological capacities, things are just going to be more complicated than it seems. But when we talk about empathy and sympathy, and at least at the level of feeling as opposed to the level of thinking, but at the level of feeling, one of the main distinctions that I think we can draw on is about the distinction between feeling with somebody and feeling for somebody. And empathy would be this capacity for feeling with somebody. And I think a kind of good description of what that means is an experience that we all have, hopefully not often, but we all have it. And it's the experience of watching somebody trip and fall, and you can tell that they get hurt. Mm. And when this happens, I think we often, like, let's say they hurt their knee, you feel a kind of strange reaction in your own knee. Right. There's a kind of, it's almost as if you fell and hit yourself, and now your own knee is feeling a kind of pain as well, even though you didn't fall. And this kind of reaction, depending on where you are, it's called empathic contagion or mirroring empathy. And it's a way of talking about what it's like to feel with somebody where you and the target are feeling the same kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Right. So pain in this case, in the same part of the body. And sympathy is usually not that anyway. When you have a kind of sympathetic response, which you might also have to the person who fell over, it's not usually the exact same emotion or experience that you're experiencing, but something else. So it might be care or concern, or if it's somebody that you love, then love, right? And sometimes you don't want somebody to feel empathy for you because it gets in the way of their job. So just think of a physician, for example, and you go and you describe your symptoms to them. You don't want them to feel those symptoms. It might get in the way of diagnosis. It might just get in the way. If it's a surgeon, it might get in the way of actually doing the job. You do want them to be sympathetic. You want them to care. You want them to be concerned about your well-being, but you don't necessarily want them to feel the same thing. And so that's a rough way of getting the distinction.
The distinction between the two. And out of curiosity, when we talk about your president, for example, people have often said that he lacks empathy. But if we're to take your example, then you could probably argue that about a lot of people and a lot of former presidents.
Yes. I mean, I think that's true. I think empathy can be really difficult, actually. But of the many things that Donald Trump lacks, I mean, it would be empathy. Mm-hmm. It would also be sympathy for just about anyone but himself. But I think getting the distinction helps to explain what that means, right? That there isn't a care or concern as opposed to same feeling here for a population or a person.
Mm. And when we talk about VR then, and I said, you know, there has been a lot of excitement around VR over the last number of years. And we were told that when we go to the cinema now, we're going to, you know, in a few years time, we'll all be watching our films using VR, or perhaps we won't be doing it in the cinema anymore. And gaming will certainly be hugely influenced by it. Did VR also, and those who are kind of working in that area, think that empathy is very important to it, or does it matter that much?
So if you're in a you know, an entertainment industry, I think you're trying to produce a certain kind of experience, and it's an experience that might be sort of capitalistically grounded. But so in that case, whether or not we're getting something right about somebody's perspective in virtual reality might be less important than whether it's, you know, entertaining or interesting. But a lot of the research that's done on the psychological end here using virtual reality, I think, is trying to create or recreate other people's perspectives. So I think trying to engage in this like empathic project. And there is, I think, where we often run into problems.
And actually, you use the example, because you've written about this recently, you use the example of the experiment where people were told, were allowed to experience what it would be like to be a cow. So talk to us a little bit about that and how it worked.
Right. And it's really, there are many things about this study that are ingenious and fun. And I think the only problem is that it can't actually tell you what it's like to be a cow. So the way that it was set up, and this I really like about it, is that it utilized a whole room. So it wasn't just somebody sitting on a chair with a headset on. You had to get on all fours and walk on your hands and knees in this room and wear one of these virtual reality headsets. And using the headset, you could see you were in a pasture, and you could see other cows around you. And you had to kind of just like walk around on all fours. You could take your head down and eat a little grass. There was a trough to draw some water from. And then occasionally you would be led to certain spaces. And that was with a virtual cattle prod and then a real cattle prod. So in the virtual space, you could see somebody approach you and poke you with a cattle prod. And in the real life of the experiment, there would be somebody with a kind of vibrating stick who would touch you and in the same place and kind of give you that sort of physical feedback. And eventually you lived through parts of a cow's life up through the moment when you were told in the headphones that you had now achieved your correct weight. You were headed for slaughter. And so then you were led with the cattle prod onto a truck, and then the simulation ended. And what they were trying to see was just how would people experience this, right? I mean, how did they experience it? And then they had them keep a food diary after the experiment, just what are you eating every time you eat something, and see if there was a difference there between people who went through the experience and people who didn't.
And what happened? What was the impact?
So the people who... the control group, the people who did not go through this virtual reality experience, didn't really change their eating behavior in any significant way. And the ones that did showed a pretty marked decrease for at least a few weeks of eating less meat, actually, for quite a bit, actually. And that does seem to be something that a lot of these studies show, is that you can change behavior for some time, actually, after having these kinds of experiences.
So they felt a sense of empathy with the cow.
That is how they describe it, yeah.
But you don't believe that?
Well, I don't think that we're getting an experience of what it's like to be a cow when we do this. But I do think we might be getting more sympathetic reactions, especially if you think that a cow's experiences are like your own experiences, then if you don't like the vibrating stick on the side of your body, then you must think the cows don't like it. And on the basis of something like that, you might think, well, maybe we shouldn't treat cows this way, right? So I think I would call that a sympathetic reaction, not an empathetic one. And in that case, I think it's doing some of the work to explain the behavior change.
Do you think VR will be a game changer in certain industries, Eric?
Yes, I think it already is becoming a game changer. Both in at least academically, there are a lot of academics who are using it, but in the gaming industry, I think there's significant excitement and optimism about new possibilities. I think it's a little harder with the film industry because of how we have to direct attention. So, right, I mean, when you're a director, you want people to look at something, but if you have a fully immersive environment, people can be looking any which way. And so controlling attention is much harder with film anyway. In virtual.
One other thing, you had said in that article that it's dangerous to think that virtual reality is an empathy machine. Why dangerous? Why use the word dangerous?
So that's a good question. I mean, I think that there are at least three things that we should be careful about when we think about how we use virtual reality and maybe who should be using virtual reality. And I think at the most basic level, and maybe this is just a kind of philosopher's problem, but at the most basic level, I do think it's important that we get things right about what we're seeing and thinking and feeling. And so I think we're making a mistake when we think, for example, that we now know what it's like to be a cow, or to take a more serious simulation, that I now know what it's like to be a Black man in the United States experiencing like racial aggression, or know what it's like to become homeless after experiencing the becoming homeless simulation. So I think that I'm wrong if I think that that's what I now know. But above and beyond just like that I'm wrong about that, I think that it could affect us. It could affect how we think and feel about these people. And in particular, I mean, I think if you've never experienced any of these simulations about like becoming homeless, for example, some elements of them are kind of game-like. And so at some stage here, where this is a simulation where you experience like three different phases of slowly becoming or experiencing homelessness. And first you have to lose your apartment because you lose your job. And part of that element is trying to figure out what things to sell and what things to keep in order to make rent. And there's a kind of game element to this. And I think it's possible that some people could really enjoy that part of the experience and come off thinking that maybe it's not so bad because I enjoyed it.
I see.
That if the simulation gives me that experience and my own experience wasn't bad, that could affect how I think and feel about people.
Maybe it's not so bad after all. Yeah, interesting. Well, it's still it's an interesting world out there as regards film, as you said, because who knows how it would work from a cinematic perspective. But the gaming world is certainly pretty excited about it. Anyway, we shall see. Eric, very interesting. Eric Ramirez is philosophy professor at Santa Clara University in California. Great to talk to Eric, and thanks so much for joining us here on the show this evening.
Thank you so much.
News Talk 106 to 108.